We have been studying the book of Mark. I'm asking you to read the whole book of Mark during these weeks leading up to Easter. And if you follow the reading plan that we have that included in the Saturday email, we give you a link there. You also can find that link on our website with the messages and stuff. You can find it out there. But we're going to have you finish the book of Mark by Easter. And in this journey through Mark, what we see is a picture of Jesus. That's really what we're looking at. We're looking at the life of Jesus, and we're seeing what Jesus does, what he says, sort of the people he hangs around with. And hopefully in this time that we discover or remind ourselves who Jesus is, that will prompt us to continue with a deeper relationship with him. In our passages today, we're gonna see that Jesus is compassionate. We're gonna see that Jesus is a provider, and we're gonna see that Jesus empowers. And hopefully, in light of those three things that we see about Jesus, we'll accept his invitation to join him on the journey. We start out with Mark chapter 6. Verse 34, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. They said to him, that would take more than a half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? So this is a shorter passage within the bigger context. And if you have your Bibles and you want to look at the whole context of chapter 6, go ahead, but I'm going to fill in the blanks, basically. What we see here in this encounter, we see Jesus being compassionate. When Jesus landed, he saw the crowd and had compassion on them. So that's the first thing that Mark tells us. And what we need to understand is this place where he landed is a very remote place. There's nothing around. DoorDash couldn't find them, right? Okay? Amazon would say, go down to the hub in downtown Dothan. I can't find this place. It's very remote. Why were they in a remote place? Well, here's the backstory. They were in a remote place because Jesus and the disciples wanted to get away. They really wanted to get away from everybody because what had happened right before this, so the picture is Jesus is in a boat. So why did they get in the boat? Before this, Jesus had already sent out the disciples two by two. Mentioned that last week. He sent them out two by two. They had come back and started reporting to him. There was a debriefing going on. They were telling Jesus all that they had said, all that they had done, the demons, the healings, and the preaching. They were reporting on all that. And as they were reporting on that, people started coming and going. People started coming up to them, basically interrupting them, interrupting the conversations. And so Jesus and the disciples did not ignore that crowd. They paid attention to them. So much so, the disciples didn't even have time to eat, okay? And so finally, when they had taken care of the crowds, Jesus said, let's get away. They jumped into the boat. But here's another reason why they wanted to get away. Right before this, John the Baptist had been killed, beheaded, because of a woman wanted his head on a platter. And so when you know the relationship Jesus had with John the Baptist, that they were cousins, and when you realize that there were some disciples that followed Jesus that had been followers of John, they needed a grief break. So that not only were they exhausted from their journey, the two-by-two journey, debriefing of Jesus and the crowds, now they had John the Baptist, they really needed to get away, so they all got on a boat and went away. That was their plan. They needed a physical break from the people. They just needed some time to get away. Have you ever needed to get away, but it doesn't happen? You're exhausted. You're mentally, you're physically exhausted, but then something interrupts you. Somebody interrupts you. And it just doesn't happen. How do you treat those interruptions? How are you handling those people when you're physically, mentally exhausted, and then somebody comes up to you? How are you treating them? My hunch is not very compassionate. And then you're mentally, physically exhausted, and you have to deal with your family. How does that go? Most likely not very well. What we see with Jesus, he wanted to get away, but he doesn't let his mental and physical state get in the way of meeting the needs of the people, of showing compassion to those that are wanting something from him, right? The scripture says he saw them as a sheep without a shepherd. In other words, he saw them as people needing direction. He saw them as people needing hope. And actually, he saw them as people who were hungry. But he dealt with those first two things and not the last one. He did deal with the last one, but he dealt with the first two things initially. He began teaching them many things. So in this sense, when Jesus started teaching them, he had compassion on them. He began teaching them many things. He became a provider at that point. He became a provider. And I hope you catch this in the story. The crowd, the people who had been interrupting him and the disciples, and for the whole reason that they got in the boat, that whole crowd went, wait a second, we know where they're going. They could look out across the lake and notice the direction that the disciples and Jesus were going, and that crowd took off to try to get to beat them there, to be there when they landed their boat. So that crowd took off and went to that remote place. They didn't take the easy way. They didn't take the most convenient way. They went to a place I doubt they would ever go to that place had it not been for the knowledge that Jesus was going to be in that place. Okay? Because, in my opinion, because they made that effort, Jesus provided. Does Jesus provide? Absolutely, Jesus provides. But notice that there was a step forward by the crowd. That there was movement by the crowd. They moved to Jesus. Jesus had already said, if you read through Mark, and if you're reading through Mark, you've come across this story where Jesus said, if you have faith of a mustard seed, if you just have a little bit of faith, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you're moving toward Jesus. What do you want from Jesus? What do you want from Jesus? You're sitting here or you're watching and listening at some point and some time and some place. And you're listening and you're watching and you're sitting because you expected something. Or you are expecting something. Maybe it was healing. Maybe you're expecting hope. Maybe you need a word of encouragement. Maybe you needed a celebratory moment. Maybe you needed peace. You know, we're still not too far removed from the awakening, the revival in Wilmore, Kentucky, on the campus of mostly Asbury College, but across the street, the seminary too. Estimates are, and this is just one place I read, about 20,000 people may have come through this small little city. And when I say small little city, I mean, I called it Will Less when I was there, okay? That's how small it was. All right. And 20,000 people. Why did they go? Why did these 20,000 people come from all over literally the world to this small little city? They came expecting. They came expecting something. Some of them came not knowing what to expect, but they were expecting something. A few people that I've talked to that went from Dothan, they just went expecting. One person I know ended up praying for a number of people inside the chapel. Others just experienced God's presence. They experienced peace. They went expecting something, and Jesus provided. Jesus provided. And that's the point. Jesus provides. Jesus provides. But there was movement to him. There was movement towards him. It was with an expectation. And he provided. We also see something else that Jesus does in this story. He empowers. He empowers. He told the disciples when, after he finished teaching and realized that they were hungry, he said, "You give them something to eat. You give them something to eat." Jesus didn't have to do this, but remember what he'd already done. He'd already sent them off two by two. He'd given them authority to preach. He'd given them authority to heal. Okay? And they had done that. And it's like when it gets to this point, he was saying, "You guys got it within yourself. You could actually do this. You got it. You give them something to eat." Now, you remember the rest of the story. If you haven't, I'm going to really summarize it real quick. They found 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And in the end, 5,000 men were fed, which meant 10 to 15,000 total, with 12 baskets left over. But Jesus empowered his disciples to start the process. He said, "You give them something to eat." And they are the ones that found the 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Jesus empowered them in this moment. He didn't have to. He didn't have to. He could have just waved his hand and manna could have rained down from heaven. They could have had a whole bunch of Chick-fil-A's. I don't know. He could have done whatever he wanted to. But he chose to include his disciples in this miracle, which, by the way, is the only miracle included in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. He made the choice to include them in this miracle. So important, so huge, that all writers of Jesus' life said, "We got to include this." And I think part of the reason is to show us this aspect. That although Jesus can do anything and everything, anytime, anywhere he wants to, he's choosing to include us. He empowers us to come alongside him. God doesn't need anybody in this room or watching online to build his church. But he chooses to. He chooses each and every one of you in this room. He chooses each and every one of you watching. He empowers you to build his church, to be his hands and feet in the world. He doesn't have to. He chooses to. Well, at this point, Jesus needs another break. And not only does he need a break from the crowds, he needs a break from the disciples. So he said, "You guys get back on the boat, head over to the other place. Maybe they won't follow us. I'm going to go up to the mountainside by myself." And so the disciples get on the boat and start rowing out a storm comes up. They are struggling. Jesus notices that they are struggling. And he starts walking to them on the water. When they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Even in this story, we see Jesus being compassionate. Because he's up on the hillside, he's praying, and he notices they're in trouble. He notices that they're in danger, okay? There's a good chance that the boat would not survive the storm. So Jesus goes to them. He didn't have to. He could have said, "Hey, I'm in the middle of this long prayer. Me and God got something going on. God, peace be still." And could have, you know, wiped out the storm just like that. He'd done it before. His words had calmed it before. He could have done it again. But no, he chose to go to them. He chose to go to them. Because compassion is best offered in person. Compassion is best offered in person. World Vision came here a number of years ago, and I've been sending $39 to the community in Bangladesh for a number of years in supporting Jasmine, right? So I'm compassionate, right? Jasmine doesn't know me from, she saw my picture, she saw me and DeAndra's picture and said I'm going to choose them, and that's the only thing she knows about me and DeAndra. Does she feel compassion from DeAndra now? Probably not. Over the last three years, a number of us have gotten some deposits in our bank account from the government. Did that feel like compassion? We liked it. We're not complaining about it. But it really didn't feel like compassion. Because some of us younger folks were going, "I'm going to have to pay for this at some point." All right, so compassion is offered, best offered in person. And I'm going to keep repeating this over and over as long as I live. You might tell somebody, "I'm praying for you, I'm praying for you." But when you walk up to them, put your hand on their shoulder, and you pray for them where they can hear you, then they know that you have compassion on them. You can give a person 10, 20 bucks to eat. But when you take them to dinner, you take them to lunch, you've offered compassion, and they know it. Compassion is best offered in person. We know the rest of the story. We've heard it enough times where Jesus got in the boat and the sea went calm, the lake went calm. There was no more storm. He provided for the disciples exactly what they needed. They needed safety, they needed peace, and his presence brought that to them. By his presence, he provided them safety. By his presence, he provided them peace. And something else in this story we don't see in Mark, which is really interesting. The scholars say that Peter is the one that's giving Mark this information. Basically, Mark is the ghostwriter for Peter, almost. And Mark gives us a story and simply says, Jesus walks on water, steps into the boat, and the sea is calm, the lake is calm. But in the story that Matthew records, the same exact story, what do we see? Peter walking on water. And in that story, according to Matthew, Jesus empowered Peter to walk on the water. So this is what Jesus does. He offers compassion. He provides for us. He empowers us. That's what he does. But who is he? Can you describe him? And who's the best people to ask that? How about the people who have been with him day in and day out for months, if not years? So this is the conversation in Mark 8. Jesus and his disciples went to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets. What about you? Who do you say I am? Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the anointed one. What's anointed mean in the biblical terms? It means anointed to be king. To be king. Don't miss this. Jesus is king. We want to miss this, but we can't miss this. Jesus is king. For the first time in 70 years, England has a king. Coronation's March May 6th. Anybody going? Anybody going to the coronation? Right. I almost guarantee you're going to find it on TV somewhere. Just, I think that. I really think that you'll find it somewhere. We had a speaker, and I was in Orlando this week, a four-day conference, and one of the speakers was from the UK, not University of Kentucky, but United Kingdom. And as he was speaking, he apologized for Meghan and Harry, all right? But then he said, y'all keep them, please. Y'all keep them, please, all right? For most of us, the monarchy doesn't resonate. We do have one lady in our church that I believe it does resonate more with than the rest of us, but it really doesn't resonate with us. Because we all at least remember some part of our history when we went to school, or at least we remember the little cartoon on Saturday morning about King George, right? We understand that our country was founded to get away from the monarchy. The whole reason that we are a republic today is because we don't want to have a king. We don't need no stinking king, right? That doesn't play with us at all. We can't identify with that. We don't want that. But what Peter says is that's what we have. That's what we have. We have a king. And we don't want to buy into that. See, many of us, particularly a lot of us that have grown up in church or have gone to church a long time, we want Jesus for fire insurance. Jesus, save me from hell. That's why many of us want Jesus. Save me from hell. But when you read particularly Matthew, Mark, and Luke, see how many times you come across the word kingdom. You can't have a kingdom without a king. And Jesus is our king. I really think that there are churches not thriving these days is because this component is left out. We talk about Jesus, save Jesus, say our prayer, be saved by Jesus. That's was over and over and over again, but we leave out Jesus is Lord, Jesus is King. We leave that out. We don't mention that because, well, it doesn't feel right, does it? We got away from that as a country. Why would I want to get back into it as a Christian? Because that's what he's called us to do. He's called us to allegiance to the King. That's what he's called us to. And Jesus says, you know that allegiance to me as king? It didn't come cheap. He called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciples must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Are you able to live in Jesus' kingdom? Are you able to live in Jesus' kingdom? Because the message is clear. It is not about my kingdom, about his kingdom. That's the message. To follow King Jesus is all in. You have to have an all-in mentality to follow King Jesus. Because when you take up the cross, that's not for the faint of heart. That's not for half-heartedness. When you take up the cross, it's for life and death. Who do you say Jesus is? And it's really not the words that come out of your mouth. You can say a whole lot of different stuff. It's really about how are you living in his kingdom? How are you living in his kingdom? His kingdom is not bound by territories like Belgium or Monaco or Sweden. There's no geographical territory to this kingdom. But what our kingdom does have is a king who is compassionate, a king who provides, and a king that empowers. That's the kind of king I can follow. What about you? God, in these moments, we ask for your spirit to rest upon us now, because we really, really don't like the idea of Jesus being king. Yeah, he can save me all day long. But God, when you ask me to follow Jesus as king, I don't know. God, it just doesn't seem right to me. It goes against every fiber of my being. But yet that's the truth. Peter knew it. You are Messiah. You are King. And we owe our allegiance to you. May we make that decision today. To not just live for Jesus, but to live for Jesus the King.